Welcome to Tribecast. I'm Forrest Walden, founder and CEO of Iron Tribe Fitness. And on this podcast, I am going to help you find your tribe and maximize your life. Welcome to another episode of Tribecast. So excited this morning to have a special guest, my bride, Mindy Walden, of the last 19 years. And this morning, she's going to be on to have a special conversation with us about our adoption journey. So, Mindy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Forrest. I'm excited to be here.
So, Mindy has listened to every Tribecast episode, as a good wife should and has. Appreciate that. So, you're very familiar with the topic of conversation. What does it mean to have it all? Cross body, being balanced, and business. And one of the things that has been near and dear to our heart and in the conversation of balance in our family has been the process of adoption. So let's just start off from the beginning. I want to tell a quick story. The other day I was in a coaching group, and the coach asked our group, what is one of your proudest financial decisions in your life? And without hesitation, for us as a family, it was the ability for you to quit your job and stay home full time and raise our children. I know that's not the path for every family, but it has been for ours. So talk to me about that. Yeah. You quit your nursing job. You trained to be a nurse. Mm-hmm. You were excelling in the nursing field. And when Caroline, our now 16-year-old, was born, you've been home ever since.
Yeah. I think for me, I was one of those type A kind of people, and I kind of had some dreams and goals coming out of college. I thought I would end up going to anesthesia school and becoming a nurse anesthetist and having a career in that. And when we found ourselves pregnant with Caroline, I kind of still thought we would, you know, I would stay home. I mean, I would stay home for maternity leave and then maybe end up going back to school and finishing that degree. And it was like when Caroline was born, the Lord just changed my heart greatly, and I did not want to leave her. I wanted to stay home, and I knew Forrest probably wanted that for me. I'm not sure I 100% wanted that for me until she was born, and I knew that from there on out, I wanted to stay home. And so I'm really grateful to Forrest making that one of his goals. And I'm so, so grateful that I can continue to be home with our children now. I will say that as our teenagers are getting older and our elementary kids are getting older, it is just such a blessing, because I feel like they need us or need me more at home now than they did when they were little. It is such a busy lifestyle that we live, and there's so many issues socially and with all those things that come with growing up. I'm so grateful that I can still do it, because I feel like they need me at home more now than they ever did when they were little.
And I know one of our conversations is, how would we do this you were working full-time? I mean, last night I was at the track till 10 o'clock. Yeah. You were at show choir till 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. You know, it's divide and conquer. And I know we really feel for the single parents out there. You guys are superheroes.
Major superheroes.
It definitely takes both of us. So our family looks like, at this point, we have four kids. Three biological children, ages 16, 14, and 11, soon to be 12. And then Benjamin is our youngest, and he's 8, about to be 9. And we're about to celebrate our 8th Gotcha Day, so the 8th anniversary of him actually coming home. But I want to back up. One of the questions we get all the time is, you know, why have you guys adopted, and why Ethiopia, and just all these questions. So let's go back to our dating life.
Okay.
And when we were getting serious and starting to talk about marriage, we had the inevitable conversation.
Wait a minute. We didn't really talk about marriage until we were engaged. So that's a story for another day.
That's true. That's a different topic for a different podcast maybe. But okay, once we got engaged and we started talking about children and what you wanted and what I wanted, I know pretty quickly we established it would be great to have three biological children, and then maybe we'll talk about adoption. And I remember having those conversations, but really we didn't talk about it much, probably for the next 10 years or so. I mean, life was super busy. I was owning and operating and opening new businesses. And
traveling a lot.
Traveling a lot. Mm-hmm. And we were having three kids and just all that came with that. And so I know for me, it was my trip to Uganda, one of those early mission trips, when I experienced third world orphans for the first time. And I just remember seeing these kids with just no hope and no care. And the particular orphanage that I visited, they didn't have enough mosquito nets. And so many of the kids were conflicted and suffering from malaria and just these
diarrhea
mm-hmm. and these just preventable diseases. So I remember very clearly coming home, and our house had never seemed bigger and had never seemed cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a different world from the Sudan context I had just left. And I looked at you and said, babe, we got room, we got resources, we have love to give. Let's resurrect that adoption conversation. So that was my side of it. Talk about you experiencing that and me coming home with that on my heart.
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely remember seeing the burden that you had when you came home. I felt like, for me, adoption had always been on my heart since I was a teenager. I don't really remember, like, the specifics of it, but I do know that it's something that I always felt like I would do at some point. And so when Forrest came home from that trip in Uganda, it was just confirmation that it was time. It was also confirmation at that point, too. We didn't have super easy pregnancies, had several miscarriages throughout the course of my childbearing years, and it just seemed like that was the right time for both of us to be together on that. I will say that, just this is a little piece of advice for those of you who are thinking about adoption, you both need to be on the exact same page, because it's a difficult journey, it's a hard journey, and you know, if your wife's not on board or if your husband's not on board, continue to pray through that and wait on the Lord's timing for you both to be together on that, because I think that's really important.
Could not agree more with that. Okay, so we started getting serious in our conversations about it. And then another major factor is David Platt, who is a huge spiritual mentor of ours, was our pastor at the time. Talked about him a lot in the last episode last week that launched about the Ultimate Disconnect sermon, which really paved the way for this adoption as we really looked at connecting God's blessings with his purposes. But we were hearing the theology of adoption from the pulpit on almost a weekly basis. David and Heather themselves are adoptive parents. They were going through the process of adoption. God was already stirring our hearts for adoption. And so just wanted to share some of the verses that Mindy and I were praying through and reading through at that time in our lives when we were trying to discern God's voice, God's will. Is this really his call for our life? And adoption is really all over Scripture, from Genesis to Revelation. And so we just picked a few of our favorites that we were reading through and praying through, and we just thought we would share them with you. One of them is Deuteronomy 10:18. It says that he defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow, and he loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing.
I think my favorite verse that speaks to adoption for me is James 1:27. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself being polluted from the world.
Yeah, I remember that one in particular, is just really looking at what is true religion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how can, and I remember feeling like, man, we've been blessed with so much. Like, how could we not provide for one of these orphans who really has no hope? Matthew 25:40. The king will reply, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." And obviously that's the very end of a parable that Jesus told. But essentially, there is no greater least of these than an innocent, defenseless orphan who really has no hope in the world. So that one really spoke to us.
Yes, another one is Psalm 82:3. Defend the weak and the fatherless. Uphold the cause of the poor and the pressed.
And Psalm 146:9. The Lord watches over the foreigner and sustains the fatherless and the widow, but he frustrates the ways of the wicked.
Psalm 68:5-6. A father to the fatherless is a defender of widows. Is God in his holy dwelling? God sets the lonely in families. He leads out the prisoners with singing, but the rebellious live in a sun-scorched land.
Proverbs 31:8-9, speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy.
And Galatians 4:4-5, but when the set time had fully come, God sent his Son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those under the law, that we might receive adoption to sonship.
And so those are just a few. We could share a lot more about the theology of adoption. But what's beautiful about it is it's really a picture of us as Christians mm-hmm. and how we have been adopted, how we had no hope, how we needed a true father to rescue us, give us a new name and a new country and a new citizenship, and just everything that we experienced walking through the process of adoption. So for all those reasons, we decided, made the decision, we are going to adopt. Now, that was a huge decision, but that only opened up a ton of other decisions.
That's correct.
Talk to me about that.
Okay, so when you decide to adopt, you then have to decide if you're going to adopt internationally or if you're going to adopt domestically through the foster care system or through an adoption agency here with mothers who give up their children at birth. And then it starts the process of picking an agency, how you go about doing that, all of the paperwork that you have to go through, the home studies, the home studies, there's multiple ones of those. And then if you decide internationally, you have to do a bunch of paperwork and training and submit your paperwork packet called a dossier and pay the fees that go along with that. And it's quite tedious and a lot of work, but worth it.
Yeah, and it is quite the process. I'm so thankful for Mindy because I don't think I ever would have been able to fill out all the forms, some of them multiple. Mm-hmm. You're like, we've already done this, but you mm-hmm. have to do it again. I remember we had to get tested for STDs.
Oh, gosh, that was so funny.
Oh, my gosh. We went to that clinic downtown, and we stood out like a sore thumb.
We did. I do want to tell a story of that because it's really funny. So we went to the Jefferson County Health Department because it was free, because STD testing is not cheap if you do it privately. So, I mean, we had nothing to lose going down to the health department just to do it for free. And like Forrest said, we stood out. I think we probably were the only married people there, for one. And this man pulled me back into his office, and he never even looked me in the eye at all. And he's looking down at his paperwork, and he says, "Ma'am, why are you here?" And I'm like, "I'm here to get STD testing." He said, "Do you think you have syphilis?" And I said, "No." He said, "Do you think you have gonorrhea?" And I said, "No." He said, "Do you think you have HIV?" And I said, "No." And then he looked up like over his glasses and he said, "Then why in the world are you here?" So then I got to proceed to share with him while we were there. So it was a neat conversation.
Yeah, and then I also remember going to the jailhouse in downtown Homewood to get our fingerprints done.
Right.
You know, I've often joked going through the whole process of adoption, if every parent had to go through what we had to go through to adopt, I think the world population would be about 10% of what it is. It was crazy. STD testing, blood testing.
I forgot about the fingerprinting.
Fingerprinting, home studies. Okay, so we went through all that, and then we had to decide, you know, domestic or international. And based on my trip to Uganda, mm-hmm. our hearts for international adoption, we certainly chose mm-hmm. to go the international route.
Mm-hmm.
Why Ethiopia?
Well, people ask that a lot. And believe it or not, all countries have their own adoption laws. They get to make their own adoption laws. So at the time, we had two girls and one boy in our home. And some of the laws are, you know, if you already have a boy, male and a female in the home, then you can't adopt there. Or if you already have more than two children, you can't adopt from there. And on and on and on. So the countries in Africa seem to have a little bit less restrictions on their laws. And so we felt the Lord leading us to that. And I think we narrowed it down to Rwanda and Ethiopia at that point. And a lot of that was because of the in-country trip we needed something that had a shorter in-country trip for us, was crazy busy with his Fitness Together business and traveling a lot. And we had three small children at home and knew that we really couldn't stay in a country for 6 to 12 weeks. And Rwanda and Ethiopia only had 1 week trips at the time. So that's how we ended up doing that. And then I felt like the Lord just kept closing the doors for Rwanda and opening the ones for Ethiopia. And so that's how we ended up adopting from there.
And I think it really started, though, we wanted to adopt from somewhere I had been.
True.
Which in India was a closed door. Sudan was a closed door. Uganda, we got excited about, but it was a 6 week in-country stay. And then Ethiopia was just, you know, right there to the west of Uganda. And God just kept opening doors there. And then when we started investigating Ethiopia, the need was massive. Millions and millions of orphans needing.
I think at the time Ethiopia had 3 million orphans. I don't know how many it has present day, but at the time it had that many.
Okay, so we made the decision to adopt. Then we made the decision to go international. Then we finally arrived at the decision to go Ethiopia. Let's talk a little bit about the reactions we got. They weren't all super positive. Some of them were, but we definitely had to deal with some uncertainty, especially within our family.
Absolutely. I mean, it's obvious we're from the South. Our grandparents are from the Deep South. And, you know, segregation was not all that long ago, to be honest. So we had a little bit of resistance for wanting to adopt a child from a brown-skinned country. And I just remember getting some pushback from both sides of our family. And I will never, ever, ever forget this. David was 18 months old when we started the process. So he was, you know, still somewhat of a baby. And he had woken up in the middle of the night for some reason. And I was up in his room rocking him back to sleep. And I just remember being so burdened by just not the lack of support, but the, what's the word? The uncertainty, I guess, of our family and just not being 100% on board. And I just remember just praying and thinking, oh my goodness, should we not do this? You know, I don't want to, you know, harm anyone in our family. I don't like them to be upset at me, you know, that kind of thing. And I just remember there's been a couple times that the Lord has spoken audibly to me. And one was when he told me I was going to marry Forrest. And the other one was over this adoption, and it was that night, and I just vividly remember him saying to me, are you going to obey me when this gets tough? And I just remember tears rolling down my face and just telling him, yes, Lord, I will. And it got rough there for a while after that, really until Benjamin came home. So we can talk a little more about that later, but.
Yeah, and, you know, I think some of our family was very receptive to it, and I think some of them weren't. I know my grandmother, my sweet, sweet, lifelong Southern Baptist Dawson grandmother said, oh, Forrest, we've been trying to help those people for so long. They just can't help themselves. Mm-hmm. Please don't do that. Through tears,
yeah.
Telling me not to adopt. But to her credit, she loved on Benjamin
once he got home.
And, you know, it really has opened, I think, all of our hearts and our eyes to see diversity in just a completely different way. I think to see other people in a different way instead of just dismissing them and putting them in our neat little categories, to really see people for who they are.
Who they are, not their color.
Yeah, and so certainly we received some family members who were excited about it and then some other family members who were just really uncertain.
Let's just give a little disclaimer, though. Now, there is none of that.
Oh,
there
absolutely
never has been since he showed up in the Birmingham airport. So I will have to give that to my family. They have loved him just like everyone else, if not more.
All right. So after we go through all of that and we decide on a country, we tell our family we're committed. It was long and it was expensive. I think it was 27 months from the time we turned in our paperwork
That's
to the
correct.
Time we brought him home. It was expensive. Thousands and thousands and thousands of
it
dollars.
It was expensive emotionally, too.
It was expensive emotionally. In fact, we had named this child. We chose a boy. We definitely wanted a boy. You were big on birth order. And so we were looking for an infant so that he would not be older than David. He would be younger than David.
Mm-hmm.
And we had named him Andrew. We had a B, a C, and a D, and we thought it'd be neat to have an A. As far as the names of our children, we named Andrew, so we're praying for Andrew. Our kids are praying for Andrew, and then we get our referral. So, Mindy, tell them what a referral is, and then just that story of us receiving our referral.
Okay, so the referral is when they finally match you with a child, and this was all via email. Our agency was not in Birmingham. And I remember my social worker calling me, and she said, her name was Sue, and Sue said, "Mindy, we have a referral for you. I'm going to send it over via email. Let Forrest know, and then you guys can figure out how you're going to open the documents and look at it and go from there." So I called you, and you had opened Iron Tribe by this point.
Yeah, so, I remember you called me. I came home. We were at the kitchen counter.
That's right,
and
that's right.
We opened the email, and there was the picture of Binium.
Binium, yeah.
So talk about that as a mother.
That was surreal, and the gravity of that at the same time was a lot. He was just in a diaper. And he was very small. He was about 4 months old at the time when we got the picture. And he just, to be honest, he looked lifeless. But he didn't at the same time. And I remember thinking, okay, this is our baby. He looked healthy on paper. We called our pediatrician and met with him and showed him the paperwork. And he looked through all of that. And he looked relatively healthy on paper, according to him as well. And so the next day, we accepted our referral.
Yeah, and I remember we looked at each other with tears in our eyes and like, the question on the email was, do you accept this referral?
That's right.
Like, are you kidding me?
How do we not?
Yes, yes. And so immediately, Andrew became Benjamin because Binium actually means Benjamin.
Well, Binium is his African name that he was given by his birth family.
That's right. And that means Benjamin. And so Yeah.
Well, we love the name. And
yeah. So he became Benjamin, and it took a minute for the kids to switch their prayers from Andrew to Benjamin. So at that point, we accept the referral. Now we're just waiting for our call that it's time to go to Ethiopia and actually physically go through the adoption process. So I remember I was on a business trip, or I was getting up to leave to go to Chicago for a conference, and we got the email literally the morning that I'm leaving.
And like 4:30 in the morning, you had an early flight.
Yes, that it was time.
Well, and it was unusual because the social worker is usually getting the email first, and for some reason, the courts emailed me personally, and they give you choices of dates for your court date, like two or three of them, I think it was. And so I'm looking at Forrest, and he's looking at me, and I'm like, we have to take this first date, which was like the next weekend, right?
It was, yeah. And so I went to my conference, changed my flights. We met in Atlanta, went on to Ethiopia.
We actually met in Washington, D.C.
And then flew to Ethiopia. So that first trip was all about the court process. We got to meet him for the first time.
The first day we were there.
Yeah, so tell us about that.
Well, we got to Ethiopia after, you know, obviously a really long day and plane flight, and we stayed at this little guest house with the most precious people, and there was a few other adoptive families there, and the adoption agency picks you up in a van, and you drive over to the foster home where they are, and that was really nerve-wracking. I mean, I was very nervous, like butterflies in my stomach, like, how will I feel about this child? You know, is he going to be what we think he's going to be, you know, that kind of thing. And we were all feeling that way because everyone in the van, you know, this was the very first time they had met their children too. And so you get there and, you know, it's very humble accommodations. And the social worker just brings the children out one by one. We were kind of in the little cafeteria area, and we were like maybe like the third or fourth to get their baby, I guess. And I just remember as soon as he came through the door with the nanny that was holding him, I knew that it was him. And I knew that my heart just welled up just like it did when the other kids were born. And I knew at that moment that we were going to be fine. And we got to hold him all day and see him the next several days. And then we had court after that. And you want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest takeaway for me is, like you said, number one, like, this is my son. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel any differently about him mm-hmm. than my other three children. No. I mean, it was love at first sight. We've been praying for this child for so long. Mm-hmm. We've been going through this process for so long, and now he was here. And then the second emotion is, this kid's sick.
He's so sick.
He's malnourished. He, some of the things that I took for granted with all our kids is, you know, I remember just picking him up on my lap and kind of bouncing him, expecting his legs to, you know, bounce
yeah,
with
he
me.
Couldn't and do that.
He just crumbled. He was just kind of a limp noodle.
Yeah.
And he was missing hair on the right side of his head. He had yeah. a worm.
Ringworm,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and some waterborne stuff going on, Giardia. He was sick.
He was very sick. He would have the term or the diagnosis here in the States as a failure to thrive child. He had no muscle tone. When you picked him up, it was like picking up a Raggedy Ann doll. He could not close his mouth very well. It just kind of hung open, and so he couldn't swallow very well, which in turn left him in his crib because he couldn't eat the porridge that they would feed them. He also couldn't hold his head up, couldn't sit up. His hips were kind of funky, and they still kind of are to this day, but he's gotten so much stronger. They're not near as floppy. So he had lots of issues, and that made it really hard as a mom to leave him there because I knew he needed to be held, he needed to be rocked, he needed to be loved, he needed to be fed, he needed some therapy. And so that, as a nurse, too, that made it really difficult for me to leave him, even at night when we were still there.
Yeah, so we spent the week with him, and then we went to court as the conclusion of that mm-hmm. week. And, I mean, you're on pins and needles because nothing functions as it should in Africa. And there's a chance that you don't even get to make it through this process. But we did. And I remember, you know, even saying court is funny.
Yeah.
Because this is any court you have in your mind of what it looks like, this was not that.
No, it was not. And then when we walked into that judge's office, I quickly realized why it took 27 months. There were manila folders stacked up as high as tall as me. And no labeling system, no nothing. I don't know how they found anything. So I quickly realized as to why it took 27 months.
But I do remember her, she wasn't easy on us.
She was not.
Grilling us about, you know, why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. And will you take care of this child? Mm-hmm. And will you report back to us every year? And all these things. And we're just like, yes, yes, yes. Everything you're asking, 100% more. So we did pass. And at that moment, he legally became mm-hmm. ours. But then, unfortunately, we had to leave the country without him because we had to wait for him to get his visa. Mm-hmm. And so talk to us. I know as a mother, this was one of the hardest parts of our whole journey was the moment we left him mm-hmm. in Ethiopia, not knowing exactly when we'd be back.
Right.
And telling him, hey, I'm your mom, and I'll be back.
Yeah.
But I don't know when.
Right. Okay. So we left, and on paper, they told us it would be anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks that our visa would be ready for us to be able to bring him home. And so we also need to back up a little bit because Ethiopia at the time when we started our paperwork was a one-trip process. And some of the legal stuff changed in country and it became a two-trip process, which is why we ended up being able to leave and have to come back. So what ended up happening was the 4 to 6 weeks turned into 13 weeks, and our the actual orphanage that Benjamin was in before the foster home, became under investigation or something, and there was a piece of paper, a release of something that they were needing from that orphanage, but because it was under investigation, they could not let any papers leave. And so we were at the mercy of that investigation, and so we all know how slowly things move in Africa after this point. And so my fear was that this was going to take months, even years. And at one point, we knew how sick Benjamin was. And at one point, we had thought about me going over there because he was legally ours. He could have lived with me. We had thought about going over there and just living there until it was clear. And
well, that's not actually true, because you called me and said, Forrest, I'm going over there.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
He is my son. He needs his mother. I'm getting a flight. And I said, Mindy, please, please don't do that. Yeah. We have no idea how long you could be there. Mm-hmm. You're needed here. I mean, this was Mother Bear rising up saying, my son needs me.
I forgot I told you I was just
going. Yeah, so there wasn't this, we decided you might go. No, no, no. You were going to go. I talked you out of it. And it wasn't much longer after that that we finally got the call.
That's right.
That we could come get him.
Yeah, we got that call, and actually, I think it was the day before those big tornadoes that came through Tuscaloosa on April 28th that year. And Forrest was, it was another thing where Forrest was on a trip. He was going to meet me back in Washington. Then we were going to go. It was another one of those things. But because of that weather that day, he didn't get to leave. And so we bumped our flight up, I think, a day or two, if I remember right, because of that. And we ended up, we had all of our paperwork, and we were in our basement, and we were sitting on our passports and the paperwork that we needed, because we didn't know what was going to happen with that tornado. You know, we thought it was coming our way, and we knew that that stuff could not get blown away, because it would be months, if years, to be able to get him. So I vividly remember physically sitting on all of that paperwork so it would not get blown away.
And so we made it, and he got to live with us for the week in our guest house, which was amazing. We got the visa, everything processed as it should, and we got to fly home as a new family.
Yeah.
And that flight home was interesting.
Well, that whole week was interesting. Benjamin had become sicker, obviously, in that time frame. He had three different parasites. We didn't know that at the time. We knew he had a parasite, but he was just sick. Diarrhea, I mean, like uncontrollable diarrhea. I remember going to the little market that they had and getting him some electrolytes and putting it in his bottle and that kind of thing while we were there. But we went through, okay, so I had, by this point, we had had him, I think, 4 or 5 days by the time we flew back. And I knew how much clothes and diapers we were going through. So what we did for our carry-on luggage was we packed everything that we had for Benjamin, which he, first of all, brought nothing. He had nothing at that foster home that was his. He only had what we brought for him. And so we packed everything that we had brought into our carry-on suitcase and flew home with him. He pooped literally every hour, 16-hour flight. Pooped every hour, and like, I'm not talking just poop, like I'm talking blowout, changing clothes. So what I would do is I would dump the clothes in the trash can, because they literally could not be saved. And by the time we got to Atlanta, I remember he pooped in Atlanta. He did not, I don't think he slept. I really don't think he slept the whole time. And he pooped in, no, it was Washington. We didn't fly to Atlanta. It was Washington, D.C. And we were on our very last piece of clothing, and I don't know what we're gonna do. And luckily, he fell asleep on that flight. This is the only time he had fallen asleep. Fell asleep on that flight all the way till we got to Birmingham, and he was clean when we met our family. We had no more clothes. Like, no, that suitcase was completely empty, literally completely empty.
And then what a great memory, walking down the runway, getting off that final flight. We're exhausted.
Oh, exhausted.
And I can see it vividly in my mind, the just crowd of people with posters and eager faces, our family, our neighbors, our friends.
Our small group.
People who had been praying for us this whole journey. Yeah. There they were. What was that like for you?
Well, I'm glad you're talking about this. I don't think about that a whole lot. I was so tired. I mean, I hadn't slept a wink in like 2 days and dealing with yuckiness. And I do remember those faces, like all their faces, just pure joy of seeing them and like excitement. I remember people clapping. I remember our kids just running to us, and because here they were. I mean, Caroline was 8 at the time. She was really old enough to really grasp what was going on. And I just remember coming home and sitting him in the floor and the kids just gathering all around him. And of course, he didn't know what to do, but they were just so excited he was finally home. The kids were.
Yeah, everyone was, and he received a royal welcome.
Yes, he did.
I mean, we've got the best picture of all of our family sitting on the front steps of our house with posters taped to the front our front door saying, welcome home, Benjamin. And, you know, really, from that day on, he has just been embraced by our family, by our community, by our neighbors, by our school system. Mm-hmm. We've never felt like he was an outcast.
No.
Or personally, I've never felt any prejudice or no. racism. I don't know what you, any of you listeners may be thinking about the South at this point, mm-hmm. but I have never felt that.
No.
We've heard some interesting comments.
We've had
a lot of curiosity, funny stories. Give us a good story. You've spent a lot more time with him one-on-one than I have, like at the grocery store, things like that. Give us a good story.
I don't get a lot of stories anymore, but I got a lot when he was little. And I'll never forget, we were in Publix, and David was still really little at the time, too. We were checking out, and the sweet, precious little cashier, she was a young girl, and she's looking at me, and then they were sitting in the little car buggy, you know, next to each other. So here's, you know, a really toe-headed baby and a brown baby on the other side, and she's looking back at me, and she's looking at them, and she's looking back at me, and then she looked at me, and she said, "Is that your baby?" I said, "Yes," and she goes, "Well, is that your other baby?" And I said, "Yes," and she said, "Well, how did you get that other baby?" And I said, "Well, we adopted him from Ethiopia." She said, "Did you go there?" I said, "I sure did." She said, "Oh, girl, you must have really wanted them babies, because I sure am not getting on a plane to go get no baby." So it was just a really neat opportunity to be able just to share with her, you know, why we wanted to do that, and, you know, what it took to really love him and to be his parents. And
yeah, and I remember for me, it seemed so unusual at first. I really felt like every restaurant we walked into and every public place we went, people's heads were turning, mm-hmm. trying to figure out this blended family. Mm-hmm. And whether they were or weren't, I don't know. I just was like hypersensitive to it.
Sure.
But now, 8 years later, it doesn't even cross my mm-hmm. mind. I don't even think about it. I think, honestly, I have to remind myself that he's black, because to me, he's just my son and he's Benjamin.
Right. I would agree with you on that. I mean, I was out with him a lot, you know, at school functions, at the grocery stores, you know, just out and about all day long, playgrounds, you know, that kind of thing with him. So I got a lot more of that with Forrest, and so I quickly got acclimated to that. So I think Forrest would, you know, really on the weekends, by the time we would go out to dinner and lunch and that kind of thing, he would experience that. So I feel like, you know, adults are more, the kids would do it too, but they are just so innocently asking. They don't really see the color. They just see the difference. And, you know, the younger kids would be like, "Well, how is that David's brother? Or how is that Caroline's brother?" And so we would just be able to explain that it doesn't matter what color you are. He's part of our family. We adopted him, and he's a brother just like your brother or sister. So, I got a lot of that from the younger kids, more so than the older kids. The older kids could wrap their head around it, but the little ones really couldn't.
And also what's been interesting is, as Benjamin's gotten older, and there's no hiding the fact that he's adopted,
no. mm-hmm.
right? As he's slowly started to discover, I'm different.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I different? He's asked some interesting questions.
Yeah. I'll never forget the very first time he asked this. He was about 3. And we were in Publix. We have a lot of, you know, revealing moments in Publix. But we were getting lunch meat at the deli counter, and he looked down at his arm, and then he looks back up at me, and he's got just these kind of like furrowed brows, and he looks back down, and he looks back at me, and he said, "Mommy, something is wrong with me." And I'm like, "What's wrong with you, Benjamin?" And he was like, "Why am I brown and you are gray?" And so I just remember thinking, taking a deep breath and just saying, "Okay, Lord, how do I handle this?" And I just looked at him and I said, "Oh, Benjamin, your brown skin is the most favorite thing about you to me. It tells of such an incredible story that you have, that the Lord has given you. And one day you'll be able to tell it." And he was all into the Incredibles movie at the time. And he looked at me and he said, "I'm an Incredibles?" And I said, "Yes, buddy, you are. Your story is incredible."
Mm.
So I'll never forget that moment.
Yeah, there's been moments like that. Even I remember one where he said, this is later, he's probably 6 by this point, but I remember him saying, "David, you were in mommy's tummy, mm-hmm. right?" And David said, "Yes." And he said, "Caroline, you were in mommy's tummy, right? And then Brooke, you were in mommy's tummy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whose tummy was I in?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's starting to connect the dots. Mm-hmm. And again, there's no hiding that he's adopted. Mm-hmm. And so just these conversations that we're able to have with him, and you've always done such an amazing job of pointing back to that's what we love about his story, and how his story reminds us of our own story.
Yeah.
And what a opportunity it's been to talk about the gospel when people ask why, and you know, why go to that trouble and that expense and that hardship to go somewhere like Ethiopia and adopt. So what an amazing story. So let's just talk about, in wrapping this whole conversation up, we're about to celebrate our 8th Gotcha Day. That's the day he came home, and that's the day we recognize as officially bringing him into our family. And we've had some pretty awesome victories, but we also have had some pretty tough challenges. Mm-hmm. The challenges did not end just getting him home.
No,
in a lot of ways,
started.
They really just started. So, Mindy, you've been home full time. You have bared the brunt of what it's taken to raise an adoptive child. So talk a little bit about the challenges.
Okay. Well, first of all, there's no such thing as a healthy child that has been adopted. They are traumatized no matter how old they are. And so you're dealing with a child that has a traumatized brain. So there are lots of issues that go along with that, and we're working through a lot of that. Early on, he was severely malnourished. And, I mean, I think he was 15 pounds at 10 months when we brought him home, which, you know, is pretty small. And so we did a lot of therapy initially on. He was still pooping like crazy. And I'll never forget getting pooped all on in the papoose at Whole Foods and picking up the phone and calling my pediatrician personally. And I said, I can't do this anymore. We have to have some more testing than this. Something is not right. I mean, I had a buggy full of groceries, and I went into the bathroom, took off my shirt, took off his clothes, took off the papoose, washed them in the bathroom sink, put them all back on wet because I was determined I was leaving with those groceries because, I mean, it's not easy to get to the grocery store with four little babies. So, you know, those kinds of challenges at first. He screamed literally the entire first year. My ears would feel like they were bleeding, and that was just a lot of the trauma and the grieving that he had to go through. Attachment-wise, he has done well. I feel like the only thing that we don't get a whole lot with the attachment is, like, really good hugs from him. He doesn't like to hold on. He likes to hold your hand, but he doesn't like to squeeze hard or hold tight. And so we do have a few issues with that. But if you ask him to, he will. So he's progressing there. We've had to deal with a lot of hyperactivity and sensory issues. We've had to do some testing for him. I feel like I'm always having to fight for Benjamin, which I'm happy to do. He just has a little bit of extra needs that, you know, biological children don't have. And so we'll continue to do that as long as he needs.
And there's a saying in our house that only Benny.
Only Benny.
He gets himself into situations or does things, spills things.
Cuts toes off.
Oh, almost cut his toe off. Almost got swept down a sewer system.
Yeah.
Story for another day. I mean, there's just things that he does that we just haven't experienced with our other children.
No, that only he can do.
He's just special. And that's why we love him so much. We often say, what would our family be like without Benjamin? We just can't even imagine
at this point.
And one of the beautiful things of this whole process is our children have grown up with him, and their view on race and racism and segregation. I mean, even the other night, we were watching, he loves the movie The Blind Side. He loves the movie 42, which is the story of Jackie Robinson. Mm-hmm. There was another movie, doesn't matter. But
he told me the other day that he wished Martin Luther King Jr. was still alive so he could give him a hug.
Yeah, I mean, seeing him come to grips of what segregation was where he lives, for us as white parents, seeing that through the eyes of a black son, I'm telling you, it has rocked my world.
Yeah, me too.
And it's just beautiful to see. So we've had challenges, but we've also had some pretty massive victories. So let's talk about Benjamin and how he's doing now as an almost 9-year-old.
Okay. Well, first of all, those of you who know him know he's crazy smart. He knows every detail and fact of just about everything. Especially sports. We tease him, or we just say that he's going to be Auburn's like next statistician, like when he's in college or something, because he knows everyone's stats, everyone's numbers, you know, what they've done professionally. I mean, it's really, really crazy. I don't really know how he knows all these things, but he does. He may be making them up. I don't know. But he knows all of these things, and he's crazy smart in math, which is another reason why we think he's going to be a statistician, and he's a good reader. He's excelling in sports. He's a big kid, which we're not really used to. Our kids are kind of small, and so that's different for us. We have started the medication process for his hyperactivity, and he has really thrived. We've noticed a major difference. His report card from the first 9 weeks at school to this last report card on the third 9 weeks of school was drastically different behavior-wise, and so we're kind of walking that journey with him right now, and it's going well. It was rough at first, but it's going well now. So he's really growing and thriving and excelling and not cutting toes off at the moment. And
yeah, hitting home runs, yeah. And really excelling in basketball, yeah. And just so many areas of life. We're so proud.
Yeah, proud of him too. He's really worked hard. He's very sweet, and he'll talk to you for a long time, but he's very sweet.
Well, you know what's interesting to me is he is, of my four, I have trained him to give me a hug first thing in the morning. So, you know, his mm-hmm. process of learning to be affectionate has been interesting because mm-hmm. he went from not hugging at all, not touching at all, to doing it at really weird and inappropriate times. Like,
and that's just getting better.
No, it's completely getting uh-huh. better. But now, I mean, even this morning, I know it's him coming down the stairs. Yeah. He has a very distinct way of walking down the stairs.
Sounds like an elephant.
And I'll just say, Benjamin, and because I'm always in my office, typically reading, doing my quiet time, and he'll just come in and give me a big hug. Mm-hmm. So of the four kids, I can count on Benny being the one to give me a hug every morning, which is pretty cool.
That's sweet.
All right, so wrapping this conversation up, adoption is not for every family, and we know that. We felt personally called to it, but I do want to reiterate something Mindy said earlier because it's wise. If you feel called and you and your spouse are not mm-hmm. on the same page, we would just caution you to wait. Mm-hmm. Wait and pray and seek. Do not move forward if you're not on the same page. It's too hard.
It's way too hard. And you never, ever want to, in the hard moments, you never want to be able to turn to your spouse and say, this was your idea.
Oh, absolutely. And we actually know some stories of people who've moved forward not yeah. being aligned, and it did not end well. So make sure you're aligned. But if you're aligned, and if you feel called to this, Mindy, what would you say to prospective adoptive mm-hmm. parents listening, thinking, you know, mm-hmm. even now feeling a tug at their heart? Mm-hmm. What would your advice be?
Well, I first would say to really pray through it and make sure that this is what the Lord is calling you to do, because it's a journey that you'll be on forever. It won't end the day you bring them home. I also would say to, if there is that confirmation, to take the leap of faith, because once you start the process, that's the hardest part, is to actually figure out which agency you want to use, which country you want to be in. And so just to continue to press forward there, and there will be grace for those times when you're struggling with those kinds of things, and the Lord will open and close doors. So that would be my advice, just to take the next step, to move forward.
Yeah, and mine would be run, don't walk.
Yeah, run.
The need is massive. Mm-hmm. I mean, so many orphans are dying, mm-hmm. like literally dying mm-hmm. because they
before the age of five.
Before the age of five mm-hmm. because they don't have parents, whether it's AIDS or whatever situation, they've been abandoned. They need parents. And so if you're willing, the need is great. Endless. It's mm-hmm. it's endless. So wrapping this up, Mindy, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having
the podcast.
Me.
I want the listeners to know a couple things. Number one, I want to make sure anyone listening to this who has been a part of this journey, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We have felt embraced. Yep. We have felt cared for. We have felt loved. I could name so many people who have just loved on Benjamin as their own, and I think have been able to experience some of the joys of adoption and yeah. some of the hardships of adoption yeah. just by doing life with yeah. us. And what a beautiful picture of the church.
Our neighbors, I mean, we're super tight with our neighbors, and they love Benjamin they love all of our kids just like they're their children. And so, I'm super grateful for that, and our family, and just how everybody has just really embraced him. It's been really beautiful to see.
yeah, so first and foremost, thank you. And then secondly, I want everyone to know that this podcast, my business, just everything I do as an entrepreneur, as a man, as a leader, would not be possible without Mindy at my side. I mean, not only her being home with our kids, but the endless encouragement and support she has been to me to allow me to do what I've been able to do professionally. You are my rock and my ultimate supporter, and I love you very much. And more excited about the next 19 years and beyond than I have been about the last 19 years.
Well, thank you, Forrest. I'm happy to do it. You love us well, and so it makes my job easy.
All right, so this is the end of episode 12, I think we are on now. And I look forward to next week working on a big-name guest that I am super pumped about. And we will see you on the next episode of Tribecast. Forrest and Mindy signing off.
Bye, you guys.